I'm pulling away from the curb because I dropped my son off at school. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work. Okay, today is another in my History of Magic series. When last we left, I talked about Dominaria, and we had shifted over to a completely new system from design and development to vision design, set design, and play design. So it's interesting that the first three sets after Dominaria, although it was the new system, like the idea of the new system is every set would be a large set, every set would be drafted alone, and mostly we'd go to different places, but if we wanted to stay in the same world, we could, which we made use of right away. So the next three sets in a row all took place on the same place, on Ravnica. So it's sort of funny that, like, we moved away from blocks, and the next magic year all stayed on the same place. So what happened was, we were telling the story, the Bolas arc. So the story had begun in Kaladesh. It was a three-year arc, and we were completing. And so, basically, Doug Beyer had come up with the core of the story, and what he wanted was, it ends with a giant planeswalker war between Nicol Bolas and almost every planeswalker that you knew. And so we wanted that to be on a place that meant something, right? We wanted it to be in a place where there was jeopardy. And the most popular plane was Ravnica. We're like, okay, like let's have this on the heart of where we wanted it to matter. But we knew that if we're going to be in Ravnica, we hadn't been to Ravnica in a while, that if the set was on Ravnica but we didn't get the guilds, we thought people might be upset. So we said, okay, here's what we're going to do. Let's first revisit Ravnica, have two sets on Ravnica, get our guild sets out of the way. And then the third set would be on Ravnica, but not about Ravnica. It would be what we call an event capstone set, a new idea. Like, one of the things we were playing around with is, other than the very early days of the Weatherlight saga, we really hadn't done, I mean, the way magic story tends to work is, it works a lot like a soap opera or a comic book. Like there's a lot of stories that intertwine, and there's threads that lead to future stories, but most stories sort of wrap up in the context of a year. And we wanted to have a story that was bigger than that, a story that lasted multiple years. We had created the Gatewatch back during the Oath of the Gatewatch, and we wanted to tell this epic story with the Gatewatch fighting one of their greatest villains, Nicol Bolas. The way we did Guilds of Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance was we did the vision design all at once. I did them together, the idea being you want them all to be interconnected. I handed off Guilds of Ravnica to Eric Lauer, and I handed off Ravnica Allegiance to Sam Stoddard. So they did the set design respectively. The one thing about Ravnica sets is we at least up to now, have not done a lot of innovation in Ravnica sets. The first Ravnica set sort of set a standard. There's 10 guilds. We'll represent all the guilds pretty equally. We'll have cycles of 10. We'll spread it out. Now, the first time we did 4-3-3, that had some issues. So the second time we did 5-5, and the last set had 10, had all of them again. So we knew we could do 5-5. We didn't need the third set, and the Dragon's Maze had some issues. So we knew we could do 5-5. And the idea was they're going to be drafted alone. We knew Ravnica sets were kind of at their best when it's just five guilds in a large set. That way, all the guilds in the set are realistically something you can draft. Yeah, you can mix and match and do three-color combinations, but you could always draft the core guilds that are in the set. The War of the Spark was the big challenge. We kind of knew going in for the year. One of the things we tend to look at is trying to make sure that we have some things we feel very confident in, and then we can take some risks. And the idea of this capstone event set, that like it was a giant completion of everything that's going on, we knew was going to be the big thing. So I was handing off to Dave Humphreys, and that unto itself was quite the challenge. In the end, what we realized was it was a planeswalker war, so we needed to blow out planeswalkers. So we ended up putting a planeswalker in every pack. I think there were 36 planeswalkers in the set. Most sets had between 3 and 5 planeswalkers, so 36 was really really was pushing things. And we broadened what we could do with planeswalkers. We made uncommon planeswalkers. We made hybrid planeswalkers. We introduced static abilities to planeswalkers. So we really did a lot to push out there. So the interesting thing about this first year is, even though we were kind of doing new things, in a lot of ways it looked more like old things than new things. It looked, for a we are abandoning blocks, looked a lot more like a block than a lot of things we could have done. And part of that, by the way, was when we invented it, there was such a thing. I mean, we did have, the original idea was that Ravnica was going to be two sets, and the war itself was going to be two sets. The big event was going to be two sets. That was the original plan when we mapped it out. So we then wrap up War of the Spark, and the next era is what I will call the alphabet sport sets. So from a, I had learned with code names, a lot of what I'd done with code names is, if we had a block, three sets, I would make a name that connected, you know, Control-Alt-Delete, Bacon, Lettuce, Tomato. And then when we got to the two-set blocks, it was Ham and Eggs and Soup and Salad and stuff that were two. But now we were in a world of single sets. And so and whenever we had pairings, people like, we did Huey, Dewey, and Louie, like, who's first? Is it Huey or Dewey or Louie? So I decided I wanted the simplest system that people could follow. So the idea I had is, what if we just had the alphabet, pick a theme that I could do, we did sports, and then just go in alphabetical order. What's first, archery or baseball? Archery is first, that's A. And the idea was, it was just a simple system that no matter what was going on, people could just see the alphabet and know the order, which proved to be very successful. We, in fact, went all the way through sports. We are now actually to cities of the world. Okay, so originally, Eldraine, our Throne of Eldraine, our visit to Eldraine was going to be two sets. Both archery and baseball were going to be it. We audibled away from that in exploratory design for baseball. And the idea being, I think, was we're like, okay, we're trying to move away from block. Let's really test the thing of, what if we're just each set's on a different world? How does that feel? Like I said, the year before, even though it was our first sort of full year in the new system, it acted a lot like the old system. So they, okay, we're going to try something new. So we audibled, we ended up scooting up Eldraine to the second set to baseball. And the third set, we pulled together a monster set idea that was actually from the third year, that was a little ways off. So Throne of Eldraine, I handed off to Mark Gottlieb and Eric Lauer. So one of the things Eric started doing in this era is, Eric did a lot, much like I had done handoffs when we started. During this era, Eric did the same thing on in set design. Eric was in charge of set design. So a lot of these designs are like, it went to Eric. Eric sort of helped fix things up and then handed off to the next person. That's what happened in Eldraine. Is I handed off to Eric, and then handed off to Mark Gottlieb. So also there's a period where I led a lot of sets. You'll see I slowly start giving more sets to other people, but we were sort of finding our feet, and we were doing a lot of stuff for the first time, so I was leading a lot of sets during this era, a lot of vision design sets. Theros Beyond Death actually was Ethan, though, Ethan Fleischer, and he handed off to Sam Stoddard and Mark Gottlieb. And then Ikoria was me handing off to Dave Humphreys. As we started getting into this new era, the idea of let's really explore different things, and one of the biggest changes from the block system was each set was designed to maximize that set. Each set was like, okay, we're on Throne of Eldraine. We want to be the most awesome Throne of Eldraine set we can be. Now we're on Theros. We want to be the most awesome Theros set we can be. So the idea essentially was each set is really going to shine in doing what it is doing. Now, I was conscious, like one of the things that I've always had to do as this era began, and I've tried different amounts of loudness. In some ways, it's the subtleness has worked a little bit better for us. But so the idea, for example, was I would recognize themes and make sure that there are just individual themes that work. Early on, I was trying to do block themes, like, not block, because there weren't blocks, but I was trying to do a theme that ran through the whole Magic year. Like, in Eldraine, Eldraine had the courts had a monocolor theme. Theros had devotion. Devotion has a monocolor theme. So I was trying to see, okay, can we push this monocolor theme? I had a little monocolor theme. We had a little bit of theme of enchantments. Like, I was trying to find themes that could weave through. Eventually, what I would find, by the way, is that it works best when I find particular synergies, but I don't have to have synergies that run all year long. That was sort of the remnants of blocks. What I need to do is find synergies that pinpoint and connect to future things we're doing. They could be next to each other. They don't have to be next to each other. It's just more of what's in standard and are there things that click together. So Throne of Eldraine, Theros Beyond Death, and Ikoria, each set really sort of went off on its own path. I think Ikoria is important. We learned an important lesson in that we got a little too advanced. There was too much going on. Mutate was a mechanic that was very complicated. Companions was a mechanic that was very complicated. And what we learned, the sort of a lesson of Ikoria is if you overload play design, like, there's only so much complexity. And when I say complexity, we make magic sets. And we keep iterative, you know, we keep designing our magic sets. When we do something we've done before, even if it's a new tweak on it, if we have some idea of what we're doing, because we've done it before, it's just easier to understand. If we make a brand new creature ability that's, you know, like a normal creature ability, look, we've made a lot of creature abilities. We understand combat. There's a lot of things we understand, so it's a lot easier for us to wrap our brain around it. Both Mutate and Companions were really new space that we had not done, and it turned out that having both of them at the same time caused problems. In fact, Companion basically broke because set design just didn't have enough time with Companion. And there was a really important lesson there of, look, we have to think about how much, and it's not even complexity, it's more of how much novelty, maybe the better way to think of it, how much are we doing that we've never done before? And that we can handle some of it, and magic should do new things it's never done before, but you have to be careful how much and how novel it is. How unlike things we've done before is it? The more it's its own unique thing, hey, the more time they need on that. And Ikoria really was a big lesson of us to understand of, okay, part of like good vision design is biting off enough that set design and play design can chew it. And important part, one of the big changes over to vision design that came through this time period is the goal of vision design is we are, using my house metaphor, we are making blueprints. We want to make the blueprints for a house where we're picking structure and themes and mechanics. But we have to make something that they can build. We have to make something that is feasible. And that a lot of the role of vision design is making sure that we understand the constraints below us, downstream of us, and understand that we're meeting them. We started putting a play designer on vision design sets just so we had somebody who could sanity check mechanics. Hey, is this mechanic balanceable? Does this mechanic have things that we can do? And we started also tagging just the idea of how, like, mechanics went into three categories. Category number one is we've done it. We know it. This is something, meat and potatoes, we know it, we can do it with our eyes closed. This is just something we understand. Category number two is it's a tweak on something we've done. There's something new about it, but, you know, it's the basis of what it's messing around with, at least we have some understanding of it. And the final thing is it's new. We've not done it before. We like having the new stuff. We like the third bucket, but the third bucket has to be in moderation. And that we really don't want to have two separate things that are complete novel we've never done before in the same set. Spread them out. Put them in different sets. Okay. So the year after Ikoria, we get to Zendikar Rising, Kaladesh, or not Kaladesh, Kaldheim. Kaldheim and Strixhaven. So the idea there was, once again, we were doing three different sets. So Zendikar Rising was me handing off to Eric Lauer and then to Andrew Brown. Kaldheim was Ethan handing off to Dave Humphreys. And then Strixhaven was me handing off to Yanni Skolnick. So the idea there, I did try something this year, is when we had originally made the double face cards in Innistrad, we realized that there was a completely different way to use them. if we refer to the ones in stride as transforming, meaning you always play the front face and you can turn into the back face and sometimes turn from back face back to front face. Modular double face cards are like kind of like split cards, although they can be permanent. You can play either side. And when you play either side, that's the side you play. You know, maybe if the card gets back in your hand, you can cast it as the other side. But the modular, you just make a choice, and then that's what it is. It doesn't turn into the other side. And so we had known these existed when I did all the initial design work for... So Aaron had, when we originally pitched Strixhaven, one of the things I wanted to do Strixhaven was introduce these modular double face cards. We married it to a magic school trope and to spells matter. The thing we thought was nice because the cool thing you could do with MDFCs is one side could be a spell and one side could be a permanent. Something you can't do with split cards, for example. Anyway, Aaron had asked me to do some exploratory work on it. I did. I realized it was so robust that we actually had enough to do three different sets with it. Zendikar Rising did lands, so front side was whatever, but the back was a land. Then in Kaldheim, we did gods. So one side was a god, and the other side usually was another permanent. I think it was mostly other permanents. And then on the third set, Strixhaven, mostly it was a spell on one side and a permanent on the other. There were the deans, so there was some exception there. So the idea is, what if we did this splashy thing and I did it all Magic year long? I was trying to show some sort of mechanic cohesion. The interesting thing was, I wasn't... So the lesson of that was, what people want when they see cohesion is they want things that play together. And while this had a clear connection that you could see that we're using a similar tool, they didn't play together. And so it didn't quite do what people wanted. But it was me experimenting a little bit with, like, can we make a Magic year have some sort of cohesion to it? Like I said, in the end, what we've kind of learned is it's more about making sure that standard is dynamic, that there's different component pieces of it that are mixing and matching. Anyway, Zendikar Rising, we went back to Zendikar. I think one of the things we learned from our second trip is I think we wanted Revisit to be a little more, here's what you love about the place. That's why we're going back, to do the thing you love about it, rather than here's a twist and it's very different than you remember it that we had done on the second visit. So Zendikar Rising was meant to be very traditional. Interestingly, when I designed it, we did not know that we were going to be doing Dungeons & Dragons within a year from then. So a lot of what we did was lean into the adventure tropes, and a lot of those tropes are similar to Dungeons & Dragons. So, like, we did party, which was very much reminiscent of Dungeons & Dragons, you know, the idea of your adventure party. So Zendikar Rising was definitely more of a traditional return, doing the world as you, like, remembered it and loved it. Kaldheim was a set we had talked about doing forever, of doing Norse mythology. And so we finally got to that. Strixhaven, we like doing genre stuff. Magical schools, you know, I mean, there are definitely a few of really famous examples, but it's definitely a genre that's been out there for quite a while, and there's a lot of fun stuff in it. I like that we really did our take on it. We did a college. A lot of other magical schools tend to be younger, so we went a little older with it. My favorite thing is the idea of we actually made it a school that studied normal things you study in school, and that you use magic to study those things. But it wasn't like all your classes were like potions. It's like, I'm studying math and history. So I thought that was cool. Okay. So we'll get into one more year, and then we'll wrap up for today. So the next year, So the next year was the year of, Innistrad Midnight Hunt, Innistrad Crimson Vow, Kamigawa Neon Dynasty, and Streets of New Capenna. Okay. So we can start seeing some... So when we started with Dominaria, when we moved over to the new system, away from the 2-2 system to what we call the 3-1 system, the idea was we'll have three large sets, each of its in its own place, doing its own thing with its own mechanics, drafted by itself, and then we'll do a core set. Originally, Dominaria was going to have a large and a small set. That small set turned into a core set. We tried the corset for a couple of years. We ran into the same problem we ran into last time we had a corset, which is it is hard to make a corset that's applicable for the for the beginners, but also make something that stores want to put on the shelves that they can sell. It's been an ongoing problem. Obviously, as I record this, Foundations is coming pretty soon. So we have a new take on it we think might work. But anyway, if we go back to this year. So the Zendikar Rising year, we decided, we were going to go back, we were going to do three different sets. I ran the double face cards, the MFGs through them, but each set really had its own identity. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking about, okay. Following year was Midnight Hunt. So what I'm saying is, okay, so what happened was we decided that we wanted to move from three sets and a core set to just four sets, move away from the core set again. And we also decided that we needed to juggle our calendar around. We tended to have a set smack dab in the middle of summer. We're like, oh, it kind of works better maybe if we have two ones in the fall. So the idea was, okay, let's not do a core set. Instead of that core set, let's do a fourth Magic set. And the place we wanted to put it was late fall for Northern Hemisphere seasons. We realized at the time that we decided to do it at a point where we didn't really have time to make a new world. New worlds take more time than return worlds. And we were returning to Innistrad already in Midnight Hunt. So we're like, okay, what if we just stay on Innistrad for two sets? We said we can stay on Wordles for two sets. Innistrad's a very popular world. Let's just stay on Innistrad for a second set. And we decided that, I mean, I was already working on exploratory design for Haki, which was Kamigaonian Dynasty. So by the way, the way you can tell that the set wasn't planned is Midnight Hunt's codename is Golf, and Kamigao is Haki. So the code name for Innistrad Crimson Vow was Clubs. Why? Because it went with golf. it was not there originally. We sort of put it in. And like I said, I ended up leading the vision for it only because it was so fast that... so what happened was Ethan led Midnight Hunt, handed off to Eric and then to Ian Duke. I led Vow, which was handed off to Eric and then Adam Prozac. And then... Kamigaonian Dynasty was me handing off to Dave Humphreys, and then Streets of New Capenna was Mark Gottlieb, kind of handing off to himself, but then eventually to Jules. Mark Gottlieb is really good in the middle part of design, so he did all vision design, the beginning of set design, and he handed off to Jules Robbins to do the late part of set design. So anyway, we introduced the fourth set. We also had talked about, hey, we can stay in the same world. Since we were on the same world, we carried over the day-night mechanic, which was the werewolf mechanic. We carried over Disturb, although in a block-like sense, Disturb worked one way, like it was permanence into creatures into creatures, I believe. And the second set was creatures into auras, into enchantments. It's us trying to find our feet and understand. So one of the reasons we also did that is we were trying to get a sense. I mean, we stayed on the same world because we needed to because of the late choice to go there, but also was an interesting area of, hey, let's test a little bit what's going on and like, what is it like to stay on a world two sets in a row? We ended up leaning a little more into the monster themes. The first set had a little more of a werewolf feel to it. The second set had a little more of a vampire feel to it. Each of the set was built around an event. There was a harvest festival in Midnight Hunt. There was a wedding in Crimson Vow. We carried over mechanics. I mean, not all of them. There were new mechanics in Crimson Vow, but we carried over like two mechanics. So like it was a little bit more like old school designs in that there was a little bit of carryover. It was on the same world. They drafted by themselves. They didn't draft together. And so one of the things that was really compelling to me was the set acted a lot like blocks acted. That the first set sold at a certain route and the second set sold at a, like, as I explained in previous podcasts, pretty much set number one, assuming you adjust for cards in them, these two sets have the same number of cards, but a lot of times we had large sets and a small set. So this is adjusted for the percentage of cards. The first set would sell like 100%, and the second set would sell like 80%. Meaning the second set would sell 4/5 of what the first set. And it was pretty, that was very consistent, that's what happened. We tried a lot of different things to make the second set exciting. Anyway, the exact same set here, that when we stayed in the same world and we cared over some mechanics, it acted like blocks acted, and the second set did about 80% of the first set. And so, anyway, something we've realized, like one of the things that we've definitely sort of learned is, hey, if we go to a world and people like the world, we can return to that world, and we probably can return to it a little faster, because in the old world, like in the block sense, if we were on a world, and then we went, like, the next year was one whole world. Like, if we went 5 years away, that you've only visited four worlds between your two visits, right? But here, if there's three different worlds a year, and you are 4 years apart, you've visited 12 worlds, right? That is a lot different. There's a lot other things you've seen. And that even though the same amount of time has elapsed, the how it felt was very different. Anyway, the other big thing of this magic year was Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. So the original plan for Kamigawa Neon Dynasty was we were doing a brand new world. But last time we went to Japan, we did Japanese mythology. Not a lot of people outside of Japan know Japanese mythology. And we said, you know what? What if we lent into pop culture? Japanese has done a lot of things that are very big in pop culture. What if instead of leading into the parts that people know less, we lean into the part people know more? And the idea at the time was we were going to build a brand new world. Now, on my blog, I was well aware that there was an audience, an franchise audience, that really wanted to go back to Kamigawa. So what I said is, hey, look, let's just build the new world. We'll figure out later whether it's Kamigawa or not. Let's just build a new world. Don't let Kamigawa in any way shape us. Let's just build a cool thing. And then we will figure out, once we build the cool thing, hey, does it make sense to be Kamigawa or not? Then, secretly, I built a world that kind of had to be Kamigawa. We ended up having this conflict of old versus new, of modernity versus tradition. And by doing that, like, you needed things that were old. You needed things that were tradition. And actually tapping into a world we'd actually been to before with characters that were not just history in the world, but history in the game, really, really played this up. So, but having the new part meant half a set got to be all the things that we didn't do before, and we got to do all the top-down, you know, Japanese mythology stuff. And so that worked out really well. The most interesting thing about Kamigawa Neon Dynasty is it was something we've talked about doing forever. We talked about going back to Kamigawa, and I kept getting the same response whenever I would bring it up, because I'd say, oh, the people in my blog are all excited. They want to go back to Kamigawa. And the response I would get is, look, we have all these planes we've never revisited that they loved the first one. Why not go back to places that did well? I mean, Kamigawa historically did horrible, not just on sales, did bad on sales, but also on our market research. It's one of our earliest world market researches that we did. It did horrible in market research. It's one of the worst testing worlds we'd ever done. So, like, whenever I would try to pitch it, they're like, look, what are we doing here? We went, people said they didn't like it. They didn't like the world. They didn't like the mechanics. They liked nothing about it. Why would we go back there when there's so many other worlds to go back to? But we sort of, in the nature of how we did this, ended up going back to Kamigawa, which is something we didn't do, and it was a smash success. It was one of the best, I mean, I think it might be the best-selling premiere set. I mean, there's other sets that have done better, but not premiere sets. But this is the best-selling, I think, premiere set of all time. At least right now it is. Or at least it's up there. Maybe it might be fighting with one or two other worlds. But anyway, it was a smash success, and it really, it started what I call, if you listen to my podcast on the ages of magic design, it started our current age. It really sort of said, hey, you know what? There are things we've assumed we just are givens that just aren't true. That we really need to take all our preconceptions of what we can and can't do. And another real similar thing, for example, is for a long time, early in Magic, we had tried something called the Arc System, which was a simplified version of Magic where we had other IPs in it. And the idea is, oh, we'll have all these different properties and you can play them together. And then that didn't quite work out. And then the idea of doing other properties in Magic, we poo-pooed it for so long. And finally, Aaron one time said, hey, you know, let's re-examine this. Like, Magic is the most awesome game system in the world. And that one of the ways we could get other people to experience the awesomeness that is our game system is draw people in through things they love. and that there are all these really exciting properties that we could turn into magic and let people play with magic that would be a lot of fun and would draw a lot of people in. And so it's during this period that we really are rethinking a lot of our stuff. And we're having a lot of success with a lot of ideas that we, for years, are like, this can't possibly work. And all of a sudden, we try them, and they work. One final thought before we end today, that mentioned Streets of New Campana. Streets of New Campana, we decided to do, we originally called it Demon Mobster World, was our code name. We wanted a world, we wanted to try a different place that had three-color ally, like shards, arcs. The idea is each one of them represented a different type of crime story. There were things we liked about it. It had a little bit more of a modern, so like a 1920s setting or 1920s inspired setting. It didn't quite do as well as we hoped. I mean, three color sets are really hard. Players like them, but there's a lot of challenges with them. And so it wasn't, I mean, there's things I like about it. There's mechanics that came out of it that are pretty good. But it wasn't, I mean, Kamigawa was a smash success. Streets of New Campana was not. So anyways, we wrap up here. Looks like we're going to have one more, at least for now. My plan is I'm going to do one more podcast, finish up the series for now. And then in a couple years from now, if we build up enough stuff that I can talk more, maybe I'll do another in the series. Anyway, we definitely can see from a, we're getting to the point now where we are fine-tuning the new system. We're fine-tuning the sort of singular set world. We're learning more about what works and doesn't work. And we definitely have had a few things that say, hey, we really can re-examine a lot of ideas that we had and really rethink them. So as we'll get into next time, we really start to, like, open ourselves up. And the other big thing, like I mentioned earlier, is really having a better understanding of what our capabilities and how do we best set ourselves up for success. So that's the biggest lessons of this era that I talked about today. But anyway, guys, I am at work. So we all know what that means. This is the end of my drive to work. So instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.